Welcome to the Functional Divorce. I'm Dr. Karen Finn. Deciding to get divorced is one of the most difficult decisions anyone can ever make. You're stuck questioning whether it's truly the right thing to do. You worry about the kids and all the things you hear about divorce damaging children. You worry about your finances, the house, and even whether or not you're going to be alone for the rest of your life. Basically, you worry about your and your kids' entire future. And in the midst of all this worry and fear, divorce requires that you do some pretty scary things. I think that one of the most frightening things about divorce is picking out an attorney to help you with the process. I know it was for me. And, you know, you really, when you think about attorneys, you think about all the horror stories that are out there, especially when you start thinking about divorce. So I've invited Lisa Zahn to be my guest today so we can talk about what working with a divorce attorney is really like. Now, Lisa is a board-certified family law attorney with McCoy, Hernandez, Qualls, Brown, and Zahn, a family law firm in North Texas. Lisa, thank you so much for being on Functional Divorce today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I'm so glad that you're here to help us because, you know, when people get divorced, one of the first things they think about when they think about the entire divorce process is, I've got to get an attorney. But it's kind of one of those things that can be a little bit intimidating. I mean, most of us have never worked with an attorney before, and we don't really know what to expect. What do people need to know before they contact an attorney to talk about divorce?
I think people need to know that attorneys are just people in a specific profession, just like any other profession, and they shouldn't necessarily hire the first attorney, the name that they get. I think it's always a good idea to interview two or three attorneys, make sure that it's a good fit and you like the attorney you're working with, and then do some checking on the attorney. You might Google the attorney's name, or if someone referred an attorney to you, find out what the person likes. Did the attorney timely return phone calls? Was she responsive? Was she assertive in getting the job done? So those are a few things to keep in mind.
Okay, well, that's a whole bunch of information there. And I think the one that stuck out to me first was interview the attorney. I mean, what kind of questions do you even ask, you know? How many years have you been in practice? I mean, what do you do?
Well, I think it's important to do the interviewing and not be interviewed. Anybody, there are thousands of attorneys out there, and there are lots of good attorneys. There are also attorneys who are a less than stellar, and every attorney is not a right fit for every client. So the client is really the person in the driver's seat. The client might feel like she or he has less power than the attorney, so it's a good idea to interview the attorney and see if the attorney listens to what you have to say, what your concerns are, and if she has a plan to help you achieve your goals in the lawsuit. If the attorney you're interviewing has no plan and or won't listen to you, that's a tip off that it may not be a good fit for you.
So listening is really key.
Absolutely.
Now, one of the things that you said in that answer was a lawsuit. What does that mean? I thought, you know, people were interviewing their attorney to get divorced. What's the lawsuit about?
Well, a divorce is a lawsuit. A divorce is a lawsuit just like any other kind of lawsuit. So that's what I meant by that.
Oh, so it's kind of like when you get divorced, you're suing your husband or your wife?
It's exactly what it is. You are suing your husband or wife. So because that's such an emotionally fraught thing to deal with, you really want someone who's going to be the attorney to be on your side or in your corner, if you will, doing her job, making sure that she's leading you, but you remember that ultimately the duty client gets to call the shots, make the decisions, and your attorney should always keep you informed so that you can make decisions about your own case.
Right. So, really, when you hire an attorney, you get to be the boss. And
that's how
you listen.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and then the attorney provides you the information that you need to know about how divorce works because it's their expertise.
Yes, and the attorney should also have a plan and help to achieve your goals in the divorce. It may not be, of course, the obvious goal is to get divorced, but there are other goals that are of paramount importance, like a woman who hasn't worked in 30 years might want to make sure she gets some kind of spousal support when the divorce is over so she has some means of support for herself while she retrains to go back in the workforce. You may be concerned about how your children, if you have a child with special needs, you might have a big concern about your child continuing in a private school for those special needs. So that's what I mean when I refer to goals. The attorney should be in the driver's seat as far as helping you reach your goals and assertively being proactive and to help you get what you want. But the client is the one who makes the ultimate decision on whether to make an agreement or not.
Right. So it's kind of sounding like one of the things that people need to do early on in their divorce process is start to decide what's important to them. Am I understanding
Absolutely.
What you're saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's important to set goals, decide what are deal breakers and what the most important things are, and keep those things in mind as you go through.
Now, I know that divorce is an incredibly emotional experience, and any time that we're operating from a place of stressful emotions, it can be really difficult to make good decisions.
Absolutely.
What do you suggest as a way for people who, you know, they're afraid to talk to an attorney in the first place, right? They're trying to decide their future when they aren't really sure what their future is, and they've got all these emotions taking over. How do you help your clients step out of the emotions into a space where they're more capable of making informed decisions?
Well, first off, to recognize that I'm not a therapist and I can't help my client get out of an emotional state. Most of the time, I'll recommend that my client seek the counsel of a therapist just because divorce is so hard. And it's, as you said, it's emotionally fraught and people need some help. A divorce is a time when people are at their emotional, mental, sometimes financial, sometimes physical bottom. And they need that support and help. Another thing is to do goal setting at the very start. And then as time goes on, I'll often remind my clients of what their goals were when they started the whole case so they don't get caught up in the minutiae that's going on and making bad decisions that would serve towards their goals.
Yeah. Well, I think you make a very interesting point, Lisa, and one that I wholeheartedly agree with, in that divorce, for most people, really requires kind of a support team.
Absolutely, it does.
Yeah, and the support team often includes more people than just your best friend and your attorney.
Yes, because your best friend is always going to hear things secondhand and see it through his or her filter. And the best friend may have gone through a divorce and would see things through the lenses of the divorce that she or he went through. No two cases are exactly the same. And so all the dynamics of each case are different, and so is the decisions that are going to be made are going to be different as well.
Right.
But I think
you know, another... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think the support team is important. people need quite a few things, not just a therapist, but often they need to get a CPA because they don't have one. They often need to have a financial advisor. There might be other things I'm not thinking of right now, but I think a team is important. And I think as a divorce coach, you bring a lot to the table in supporting a client going through divorce.
Well, thank you. You know, one of the things that I know people get confused about is the laws governing divorce. I've had people say that my sister, my friend, my cousin, who lives in an entirely different state than I live in, went through divorce, and this is what happened for them, and this is what the laws were.
Yeah.
And I find it very interesting that we have, in the U.S. here, different laws for different states. Can
right.
you maybe touch on that a little bit and explain why we have the different laws in each of the states?
Well, because the states each have the independence to make laws concerning divorce. It's not the same as a federal crime. If there were a crime, if there was a murder committed in Texas, then the state of Texas would have jurisdiction. If there's a divorce happening in Texas, then the state of Texas has jurisdiction. But if there's something federal in nature, then the United States government would have the jurisdiction. And the United States government never has jurisdiction over divorce. So each state has
right.
to make their own individual laws.
Okay. So with that, how does where you're living and where you got married play into where you can get divorced? Is there a connection?
No, there's not. Where you got married has nothing to do with where you get divorced. In Texas, you have to be a resident of Texas for 6 months before you can get divorced here, and a resident of the county for 90 days. But you could have been married in Puerto Rico or Massachusetts. It doesn't matter.
So, if someone is looking to get what we'll call a quickie divorce, is that really possible?
They may need to go somewhere besides Texas if 60 days isn't long enough. In Texas, there's a 60-day waiting period from the time you file a petition for divorce until the date the judge has the authority to sign a decree of divorce making you divorce.
Right. And
in certain
honestly,
circumstances, that can be abated, but by and large, that's what it's always going to be.
And I think that Texas is actually one of the easier places to be divorced. I know there are some states that require a lengthy waiting period and an actual legal separation.
Yeah,
before,
there are.
Before
there
divorce
certainly
can happen.
Are some states. I'm not sure which states they are, but I know that there are states, there are some states that require a year separation, and they have something that's called a legal separation. We don't have that
yeah.
in Texas.
Right. Okay. So just pointing out again that it's really important to be aware that the laws are completely different in each of the states and that the guidelines for what's required to get divorced is different. Although I think there's one thing that's common throughout all the states, and I believe that's no-fault divorce. Could you explain to us what a no-fault divorce is, Lisa?
No-fault divorce just means you don't have to prove the other party is at fault in order to be granted a divorce. In Texas, the standard is that the marriage has become insupportable due to conflict of personalities and that there's no reasonable expectation of reconciliation. That's what the law
okay.
says. So irreconcilable differences is not placing blame on either party. It's just saying things aren't working. So if
okay.
there's fault divorce, it might be fault for adultery, cruelty, physical abuse, something like that.
Okay. So can people get divorced underneath the, I'm not even sure how to say it correctly, can they blame their spouse and get a better divorce if, say, for instance, your spouse cheated on you?
That just depends on the court that you're in and how egregious the problems were. It's possible that you could get a disproportionate share of the community estate in certain circumstances, but that is not easy to do, and it's not a given.
Right.
Just although it's a horribly painful thing for your spouse to cheat on you, that doesn't necessarily get you anything more at the courthouse. Not in Texas, anyway.
Well, so you brought up the courthouse. And I know that one of the intimidating things with getting divorced is, you know, being in a courtroom, and they have all these courtrooms on TV, and it's just, you know, there's people arguing, and you have to take the stand, and there's a jury. Is any of that realistic for going through divorce?
Very little of it. When I watch Law and Order, for example, the attorneys get up right up in the face of the people in the witness box and just stand there and badger them. The judge would never allow that in a real courtroom. That's just not permissible. An attorney can stand up, walk to the witness box, and hand the witness an exhibit, and maybe stand there briefly to help lay the foundation of the exhibit, and then the attorney has to return to her seat. She can't just stand there and tower over a witness and harass him or her. Also, arguing is not realistic. Usually, there's not arguing between the attorneys, and there's not any conversation between the judge and the attorneys. That's not going on either. If there are attorneys arguing in the courtroom, the judge is probably going to sanction them both. So that kind of thing's not realistic. And witnesses, a large number of clients feel very uncomfortable about testifying and being witnesses. But really, all they have to do is answer questions. That's the only job a witness has, is to answer questions. And it's the attorney's job to think of the questions and then ask follow-up questions, ask good questions, not the client.
Okay. Well, that's certainly comforting to know. So, does every divorce have to go to the courtroom like that?
No. And that brings up something else I was going to say. The majority of cases in Texas, divorce cases, never go to trial. They're usually settled in mediation or informally. If there is a trial, I think it's about 4% that go to a jury trial. So that's a really low number to go to a jury trial.
Yeah.
And a jury can only decide certain things in a divorce anyway. So very, very few cases go to a jury trial. So if you go to the courthouse, odds are you're not going to be testifying in front of a jury. It'll just be a judge.
Okay. Well, that would make me feel much more relaxed about the whole thing if I knew that it wasn't going to be as dramatic as it plays out on TV, and that the likelihood of having to testify was, you know, just 4 in 100.
Right.
So what makes a divorce case have to go to trial?
What makes a case have to go to trial is if there can't be any agreement. If the parties can't work out an agreement informally, and they go to mediation and mediation fails, and there's just no way to work out an agreement, the case will go to trial. If there's been really egregious family violence, that's a case where the party who's been abused is not usually going to feel safe trying to work anything out by agreement, because it's usually a she. She's been on such unequal footing with the abusive party that she can't see her way clear to making any kind of agreement, because she would take much less than she was entitled to.
Right.
So that's usually what causes cases to go to trial.
Okay. Now, I'm imagining that having a case go to trial because the parties can't come to any kind of agreement would increase the cost of the divorce.
Yes.
About how much more, you know, is it 2 times, 3 times, 6 times more to go to court than it is to reach an agreement outside of court?
It's far more expensive to go to a trial. As far as how much it will cost depends so much on the facts of the case. Are there children involved? Is it a custody battle? Are there property tracing issues? Is there a forensic accountant involved to look at the property and do a tracing or do a business valuation? The more factors, the more of those factors that are present, the more expensive the trial is going to be because it's a lot more work for the attorney. So an average case might cost about $25,000 to go to trial, but it could be less, it could be more.
Okay. And that's what, like 2 times more than if they were able to settle outside of court?
That's really hard to say, again, because it just depends on the different factors. From the moment that a case is opened, you start developing it, and if forensic work needs to be done, discovery needs to be done, that process starts, and you're more or less developing the case for trial from the start. I think the more work that's put into it and the more thorough the attorney is in developing the case from the start, the less likelihood it'll go to trial.
Okay. So how could you, as somebody who's getting divorced, how could you help make sure that your divorce is easy from the legal standpoint?
By the client doing as much homework as possible that the attorney tells her to do. For example, having tax returns with backup documentation is invaluable. For, I'd say, 2 or 3 years back, having bank statements, having credit card statements, having financial data. If there's a business, having the business records organized. But that said, if I represented someone and, say, I represented a man and his wife had a business, he's not going to be in control of those things. So that's not something he could do to facilitate it being developed better and more efficiently.
Okay. So one of the things that I always recommend to folks, you know, when I work with them and they're going to work with an attorney to get through their divorce, is that they keep all of their information together in one place. All the information that they gather for the attorney, all the communications with the attorney. And I suggest this from the standpoint of they aren't scattered and they're more organized and they can remember what kind of conversations that they have with the attorney. And I also look at that and recommend it as a way to help minimize the cost for them in getting divorced. What other tips might you have for folks who are concerned about the cost of divorce, and what specific thing might they do to help decrease the cost of it?
One big thing is to minimize your emails and phone calls. It's really easy to fire off an email when you're mad about something that's happened, something that your spouse has said or done, and to tell your attorney and just to vent. Well, that venting is costly because the attorney's going to charge by the tenth of an hour usually for every email being read and responded to, for every phone call. And if there are, I want my clients to always communicate with me what's going on, but if there's a lot going on, at least consolidate everything into one email once a day instead of 10 emails 10 times a day or several phone calls a day, because each single one is going to cost, and it's just more efficient to answer one email or have one phone conversation.
That's a great tip, Lisa. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I want to thank you, too, for taking the time out of your day to come and talk with me here at Functional Divorce. And I want to let everyone know that I have been talking with Lisa Zahn, a board-certified family law attorney with McCoy, Hernandez, Qualls, Brown, and Zahn. You can find out more about Lisa and contact her at hqattorneys.com. Coming up next time, we'll be talking about how divorce can impact your finances and what you can do about it.